For more than 100 years, parents have reached for Grimm's fairy tales to read aloud as young children drift off to sleep. Prince Charming calling out, "Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your golden hair!" Little Red Riding Hood's disguised Big Bad Wolf, "The better to eat you with, my dear!" But the story behind the stories, that of the brothers Grimm traveling the German countryside in search of folk tales, is as romanticized as the tales themselves, at least according to Valerie Paradis. In Clever Maids, The Secret History of the Grimm Fairy Tales, Miss Paradis challenges some legends about the brothers Grimm, including whether Jacob and Wilhelm wrote the stories themselves. Valerie Paradis joins us from WDST in Woodstock, New York. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So if the brothers Grimm didn't write these fairy tales, what did they do?
Well, much in the same way that a dictionary was compiled in the early years of making dictionaries, they collected stories from contributors. And the really interesting and unknown history about the Grimm's fairy tales is that many of the brothers Grimm's collaborators were women, women they knew from the aristocracy and middle class. And often these women came from big families of sisters who acted sort of like fairy tale think tanks for the brothers Grimm.
But why did these stories reside among women? They're not particularly feminine stories.
Well, fairy tales became a kind of way for women to share their sacrifices, their suffering, to celebrate their lives and what their lives were about. Many of these stories are about work, raising offspring, and different themes that women all shared for centuries before women really had access to education.
And they did not give the women, their sources, credit for the stories. Why not?
No, they didn't. Because many of the fairy tales, it's the female character who's always sacrificing something for the greater good. And in a way, the Grimms saw their female collaborators much in this way. You know, they themselves were not authors of the tales, and yet, as editors, they did place their names on the book. And, you know, many of us today almost feel they were the authors if we don't know much about the background. It was just a reflection of the age and the times that women were pretty much in the service of the greater good.
You talk about these tales, how women talked about their own lives. But you also write in the book about a recurrent theme of so many heroines as victims. Why was that a message that women were passing along?
Yeah, it's a very unusual and sort of striking, repetitive theme. You'll often find stories of women being stalked, as in Red Riding Hood, with the wolf stalking Little Red on her way to grandmother's house. And as the stories evolved through time, they were edited orally and transmitted generation to generation to basically suit the values and needs of whatever the particular generation was. In some ways, Little Red Riding Hood reads like a story on how to avoid being raped. It's very interesting to look at the various versions of it as well.
In what way? How do the versions change?
Well, there were two versions in the original Grimm anthology. The first version is very much the version that many of us know today. Little Red is met by the wolf in the woods. He manages to lead her off the path to go pick flowers for her grandmother, and he dashes ahead, swallows grandmother, jumps in the bed with her clothes on, fools Little Red Riding Hood when she arrives, and swallows her as well. And then along comes a hunter and slits open the wolf's belly and saves both the women. There's another version where on her way the wolf sees Little Red in the woods and asks her, "What is that under that little dress of yours?" And naturally it's a cake for her grandmother, but it can be interpreted in various ways. He manages to trick her, but she rushes to grandmother knowing that the wolf is coming, and the two plot to dupe him, and eventually they do dupe him into drowning himself. So in that version of the story, the women are really very affirming and empowered, so to speak.
You also write about, I think you call it the redemptive power of fairy tales for the brothers who had had a fairly short childhood of their own. Tell us a little bit about their own personal story.
Well, their father, Philip Grimm, died when Jacob and Wilhelm were quite young, 11 and 10 years old. And really, at that moment, their childhoods were terminated overnight. They had to take on the role as the father figures in the family. There were three other brothers and one sister and their mother. And really from that early age, they knew that they would have to become the providers for the family. What's very interesting is that each of them only contributed one fairy tale from memory to the collection. And to me, that almost feels like a sign that they themselves really didn't partake much in listening to fairy tales or even having that luxury because their childhoods were cut off so abruptly.
Now, they named their first volumes Children's and Household Fairy Tales, but did they mean these for children?
You know, back then, even after the first volume was published, there was some criticism of the violence or other sort of sexually implicit themes in the tales. But the brothers argued that this was the way they had found the tales, and having found them that way, they felt that they were invaluable documents of the historical past. And in that way, they were true historians and linguists.
Valerie Paradis is the author of Clever Maids, The Secret History of the Grimm Fairy Tales, published by Basic Books. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.